Oh, wait, how old's your brother?
My brother's two years older than me. I have another one's 2 years younger than me.
Really?
All white, if that was a question.
That's
all right?
A big deal.
We'll be right back.
100%.
This episode of Two Bears, One Cave is sponsored by Kettle and Fire Bone Broth. Made with all organic ingredients and bones from 100% grass-fed cows and free-range chicken, ease your body into a fast. Instead of cutting food cold turkey, bone broth gives you the nourishment to get through the hangry phase and helps you feel energized so you don't feel fatigued. Bone broth is a whole food in liquid form. It's easy to digest. Nutrients are absorbed quickly. Gelatin coats the inner lining of the digestive tract. Unique amino acids and vitamins and minerals form connective tissue and protect microorganisms that live in the gut. Available at almost any grocery store in the country. Cleanest, highest quality bone broth on the market. Great for fasting support. For a limited time, you can save 25% off your entire order when you go to kettleandfire.com/bears and you use code bears at checkout. That's kettleandfire.com/bears with code bears at checkout for 25% off your entire order.
Do you guys have an ashtray?
Yes.
Thanks.
My daughter, Georgia, started smoking.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She was smoking vapes.
It wasn't because of me, was
no.
it? No. That's whore, you know?
No, but I started buying her American Spirits. I wanted to smoke cigarettes instead of vapes.
Have you guys seen the Gary Muledeer documentary? You guys should watch it. He's like 100. You guys would never know him.
Wait, which documentary?
Gary Muledeer. He was the guitar guy who would shoot an arrow with his guitar into a rubber chicken.
No.
And he does like a lot of one-liners and stuff like that. He's a classic like 70s guy.
Okay.
So, you know, if you want to see how the comedy before the boom, before the bus, before the boom, like, you know, take you back to prehistoric times.
Wait, were you a part of the first boom?
No, I started comedy right at the end of it. So it was like, you know, really bad. And I was going to tell somebody else, I was like, you know, it was so bad on the road that like we thought, like I was thinking it was going to be something like where it's like, you know, we do our show and then afterwards we have to fight the cook for like, you know, like bare knuckle boxing. Like yeah, that was really what it would be. But it was so bad. I mean, it was just terrible.
What year was that?
87 is when I started. So I don't think comedy got good again until like the mid 90s.
I remember because you on
when did you guys start?
I started in 02, January.
No way. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Amazing. I'm coming up on like 37. In 3 years, I'll be doing it 40 years. So
holy shit.
43 years?
40.
No, 40 years. It feels like that.
I started when I was 26. I'm 51 today.
So. Happy birthday.
No.
He meant he just learned that he's 51.
I thought I was
adopted. Oh. Happy birthday. Have a cigarette.
No, I just turned 20. No, I just turned 23, actually. I moved here when I was 22, and I started a few months later. I turned
really?
20. Yeah.
Wow.
But I remember
you're coming up on what, like 20 years or so?
22 years.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
22 years.
So it must be 25, I'm guessing. I'm 51, so what?
Yeah.
Yeah, 25 years.
That's great.
You had the sports coat and the clean face. That was clean
yes.
face. Yes, I remember that.
And now it's all do-rag.
A do-rag, yeah.
For some beefs.
Is this to get on Club Shay Shay? Is that what you're wearing this?
Hey, everybody dresses like this down at the shelter.
Yeah. What is the do-rag? That's just...
I don't know. I just figure, you know, the way things are going in the Middle East, better be hedge my bets. Anyway, well, that's great, guys. So not even like, you know, so you guys never knew like a dry time in comedy.
Well, I mean, I don't know, like the early 2000s.
When you both came to see me at Brea, right?
I worked with you in Brea twice.
Yeah, so there you go. So,
but that was
already, comedy was big, but it wasn't as big as it is now.
Not like now.
Yeah.
Not like now.
That was the.
Look at Dave.
Look. Ew.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Holy wow. I didn't know I ran the Ukraine. Look at that. Look at that thinning.
Yeah.
Thinning to bald.
I saw your Aspen set where they had the gondola behind you.
Yes.
I remember that set.
Yeah. We all thought Aspen was going to be the Nashville, but it didn't turn out that way.
Right. Yeah.
It was like high altitude. Everybody's gasping for breath.
Yeah.
The crowd is so rich, they could care less.
Now, when you did.
Can we get that off?
When we did,
I really hate watching.
When
myself.
You did Montreal, was it still? Because when I did it, everyone had like the high hopes. So like, this is where like yes. careers get made. But we learned that, like, oh, no, that's over now. Because I went for the first time in 07. They're like, it's basically.
Yeah, no, that's where I remember Mitch Hedberg crushed.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there was deals for him after that. And also Larry the Cable Guy. That's where also he played. And, like, you know, he had the best set of, we were playing Jimbo's or some comedy room there. And he just killed it. And I think that also led to stuff. So
that
for
was
him
still
too.
Happening.
That but was the that
nothing,
was,
nothing now.
That was the legendary Mitch Hedberg where he did the set and then Dave Becky got him on a plane and got him out of there.
Really?
They were like, he went up, did like one set and destroyed. Everyone started flooding him with deals. And Dave Becky's like, you can only fuck this up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out. Just leave. You're gone. You're
That's
done.
Good wow. advice. That's good
yeah,
advice.
It's great advice. Yeah. I wish I'd taken that a few times.
Get out of here.
Because once you do good, then especially a guy like me, you get a few drinks in you and start fucking feeling yourself to people.
Well, that was the whole thing there. It was just like, it was the party and then it was the shows. And like, I have to say the crowds were like the Nasty Show. They were great. Yeah. And Bobby Slayton used to be the host and he was a star. And Dom Irrera, those guys, like they kind of like ran Montreal. And the crowds were great. And I think that was because like Bobby had like a, broke them like horses. Like he showed them what to do, what not to do. And like doing that show, like you felt like a rock star.
But
and then I did it years later and it was the worst.
It was nasty then.
Yeah.
Because everyone was clean. Everyone was trying to get a television development set. Mm. No one was going up talking about putting thumbs in asses. And then you'd go up and now it's like they do the Nasty Show and I'm like, oh, people are just doing their sets.
But it's also the crowd became like this kind of feral, wild, like almost like at a casino, here's some comps. Go see the Nasty Show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure it's better now. I know the guy who runs the festival. He's a great guy.
Bruce?
And yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's really difficult to like do festivals, especially since now there's festivals everywhere. So
there are.
Would you start? Because I always felt like the tour that you do could be a festival.
Yeah, I would. I don't know what that's going to be. I honestly, right now, I'm just doing it so I can spend time with my daughters in the summer.
Oh, that's cool.
And my favorite comics. We just put out an offer to Christina, see if we get her to go. Good luck.
Where to go? Where?
To the Fully Loaded. Do Fully Loaded.
A run?
No, just do like a week.
Oh,
yeah, but like and then we do the cruise.
How does that go?
Oh, fucking.
So you mix with the crowd through the cruise?
Oh, yeah. It was, by the way, you got to pick the right comics. It's funny, in doing the tour, I've realized there are comics you can say that are on the tour that get everyone to go on the tour. Like when you did the first tour, everyone immediately was like, hey, can I hop on? And you're
really?
Like, yeah. Oh, you.
I didn't know that.
You didn't?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, if I can get you, Lewis Black was a big one because everyone wants to meet him. Like, no one gets to spend time with him. And then you get a night hanging out with him, and everyone's, like, cornering him. And
well, Lewis you're helping me out, man.
No, but we got you to go to
Scranton, PA?
No.
Yeah, you know.
No, we went out to that bar in Dayton.
Oh, yeah, that was a flashback.
That was like crazy because we're like, who wants to go out? And everyone's like, I don't know, it's late night. And Dave goes, oh, let's go. And everyone was like,
okay.
Tommy, we put 15 people in a fucking van for like 8 people. We crammed. I was sitting on the floor. Everyone was there like, we're going. And then we went to the bar.
You're impressive because you kind of did what I did on that show, which is like you went shot for shot with everybody. Oh, you know?
Yeah.
Unlike the rest of them, you had somewhere to be the next day. They didn't.
Yeah. I went out with Dave in Brea one time. This is during
the TGIF?
During the Insomniac days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I just remember I woke up in an apartment. Someone's apartment.
Wow.
Like I blacked out and woke up in an apartment just trying to keep up with the whiskey shots.
Smells like a book deal to me. You know, the thing is like, I give you guys a lot of credit because like, you know, now that you're at the point where like, I guess you can control your travel, but can you imagine being like that hungover on a regular flight on a Spirit Air, how like bad that would go?
I remember I did when the weekend George was born, they were like, you can work that weekend. She was born on a Wednesday. And I was like, I probably should stay home with my daughter. And they go to Tell in Miami. I was like, I'll be there. I left Thursday morning. George was born on a Wednesday. I left Thursday morning.
You did?
It was a Tell.
Yeah.
And so I went down and I was like ready to party. And you were sick. And you were like, the first night, I'm not going out. I don't feel good. And I was like, okay. So I drank at the bar. Friday night, you're like, you sensed that I was like waiting to go party. And you're like, I'm not feeling good. We'll go out tomorrow night. And so I was like, okay, cool. And then Saturday night, you're like, I'm give me one more night. Well, I promise you we'll go out Sunday night. And so then Sunday night came around And you looked and you were like, okay, let's do it. And we went out to a bar and I had never seen anything like that in my life. Everyone was throwing shots at you and you were like, I can't. And then I was just taking every single one with you.
Yeah, no, you're good, man. And let's face it, that story says something. You are a super fan of mine and a debatable dad. All right, you know, you can have kids anytime, but some hack is playing in Florida. I got to check that out.
Listen, 20-some years, that still holds true.
No, I love that you bring, like, your whole family on that tour. That's really cool. Well, I love that, also, like, the bragging rights those kids have, you know?
Well, like, I love that for Father's Day, me and Georgia sat and watched Attell together on Father's
Day.
Well,
that's terrible, but...
It was fucking awesome. We did yoga in the outfield that afternoon. I think we flew on a private jet that morning.
Yes, that was a great story because it was from where? It was like from Ohio to Rochester.
Yeah.
It's like the word, like no one ever takes a private, even the president wouldn't do that. You know, it's just like, look at us, everyone.
They were like, because
you did that for us, though.
I did that because you and Big J were there. And I was like, everyone wanted to be on the private jet.
Yeah. But you were cool because the money, you know, it's expensive. You guys know more than me, but you're like, they have all the snacks and you're like, take everything.
Yeah.
Oh, honestly, it was like a 30-minute flight.
Yeah. Everyone went to go grab seats. And I was like, hey, two seats there, Dave and Big J, me. And I don't give a fuck who's sitting next to me. Yeah. And I was like, but I'm sitting across from these guys. I'm drinking in the morning with these guys.
Yes.
And then Big J had a couple cocktails. And then me and Jay just hammered you with questions.
Fuck yeah.
It was the...
Jay's a buddy of mine too. Jay and I used to go on the road together also. He's a monster headliner now. He's doing great. But I was going to ask you, like, on your run, man, you're hitting towns that I never could hit, like Mississippi. Like, I've never played Mississippi, so I'm like looking forward to that.
It's going to be fun.
And it's in the summer, Mississippi in the summer.
There are the big names like Jay's. I mean this with love, but Jay's like a name that you say Jay's doing the tour, and everyone's like, yeah, I'm in, because Jay's such a fun hang.
Oh yeah,
it's all about like Soder is just a great fucking hang.
He's a great
comedian.
You got some really big names there too, man.
Yeah,
I mean. When I did it, you had, who was on that one? That was Shane was doing
Shane
it too.
Gillis. Shane Gillis, I think, he told me. It's weird because Shane's gotten so big, you can't go to his agent.
You can't follow him. He's really hard. He's a hard follow. I gave it up to you too, man. You had to follow all that act.
I followed Joey Diaz and Shane Gillis one night. And I remember being like, I remember my daughter's like, you go next. And I was like, yeah, I know.
It's Death Wish.
I was like, don't worry, I take my shirt off.
It's Death Wish.
But Shane Gillis is like, man, he's really hit his stride.
Yes.
I feel like, did you feel like in your career there was a point when you figured it out enough that like everything you were saying was just popping?
No. I feel like every time it's like, you know, debatable, like whether, you know, it depends. When you go in front of your crowd, you kind of like, my crowd gets it. They love jokes.
Yeah.
They love other comics. I always ask them who you went to see. They've always gone to see you guys. They love you guys. But when you go like at the Cellar late night, you get a lot of tourists there. There's a guy there with his rolling bag. You know, he's heading out for a flight.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, you know, if it works here, it's going to work. But, you know, at some point you're like, it's, you know, it's 2 a.m. You know, half of the people in here kind of don't want to be here now, but I'm still going to try something. And then I get angry at them. And the people at work that go, that's my favorite part, when you get angry, you know, so... I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing it there for, but I guess it's habit. But it's also like we know that like you have to go on, like you guys going to the store. You have to go on in front of people who like don't know you too.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
That's part of comedy. You know?
That's the best part about jumping on shows like unannounced is that you're getting like an honest take.
Well,
it's tough though too, because especially if you have a style that does work with your fans. Like I feel like I've created this, for lack of better words, like this this like Harry Potter type story of my family. So everyone knows these characters. And then when I go in and I go, yeah, my wife's old as fuck, they're like, yo, that's your wife. And I'm like, oh, yeah, but...
Yeah, yeah. But what if it's like the one night you don't want to talk about that, you want to work on something else, then they feel cheated.
It's all jokes.
Yeah.
I have so many jokes right now. Oh, so many.
Wow.
I have a theory that school shootings was our... like our fear was getting pulled in the back of a truck, fucked, and then your head cut off and left in a drainage ditch.
Right.
All these kids are just afraid of school shooters. I was like, I think our fear was worse.
Yeah. Well, when I was growing up, it was cults. Like, you don't want to get brainwashed and get cult.
Yeah.
You
know? And our parents, it was the Cold War.
Yeah.
Everyone get under their desks.
Yeah, the Ruskies.
Yeah, every generation has a fear. So I've been trying to work on... I've been trying to work on a joke that tethers addiction to alcoholism. Because I. Yeah.
Your two favorite things.
You got a PowerPoint? You can show me how this. So, well, whatever. I mean, you guys are working on new hours, right?
Yeah.
You're working on. Yeah. And I've seen, like, that's an amazing turnaround, man. Like, I think I'm, like, spent now. It's going to be.
What's the name?
Yeah. Hot Cross Buns. That's the name. Yeah.
It's not Y'all Ain't Shit.
What?
No. Okay. Okay.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. I was somebody who wondered whether or not the sugar-free stick was going to be flavorful. And I'll tell you, it is my favorite. I used one this morning. I went on a run and I put a sugar-free stick pack into my water and boom, here I am. One stick in 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. There are no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar in the sugar-free version. Liquid IV is non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. They replace sugar with a proprietary amino acid allulose blend. Allulose is a naturally occurring sweetener with the same sweet taste and texture one can expect from table sugar. Liquid IV is perfect for daily use before a workout, when you feel run down after a long night out, and on long flights. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code CAVE at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CAVE at liquidiv.com. You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. That's right. You can actually pull up what the view will be from your seat, which I think is one of the coolest aspects of using this to get tickets to a big event. Save up to 60% off when buying last-minute tickets for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, and more, and save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the game or event. Their all-in pricing feature shows the total upfront with no surprise fees at checkout. You also get to see a panoramic view from your seat in the app before you buy. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code BEARS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BEARS for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
It's really hard to domain name that. It's really hard to get a...
Wait, Hot Cross Buns?
Hot Cross Buns, yeah.
Where'd
You'll figure out why when you
shoot
watch it?
What? Where'd you shoot
it? Shot it in Cobbs. And the one thing I wanted to do, and I'd like your opinion on this, is like, going into it, I said to everybody, my director, really great guy, Scott Gallagher, I said, I want it short. I want it really short. I feel like no one has an attention span now.
You're totally
right. That since I have to keep touring anyhow, you know, it really is not like I'm going to be able to take a year off or anything like that. I'm going to have to go right back on the road. But that wasn't it to save jokes. I really didn't. I gave away most of my, pretty much everything good I had. So I was like, I just want it short because I think that I pop better since my stuff is really short. Like there's like 90 jokes in the 30 minutes. So whatever.
Your Skanks for the Memories is for me the prototype of how a special should be done. Because there is you never in that special, and this is so important to me, you don't ever go back to a subject. Like once you cover something, you move forward.
But I think, don't you think that's, because I was talking to, I work a lot with Louis Katz, who's a great joke writer, by the way.
Great.
And, you know, the guys I work with also are like into jokes. So I'm like, I always have like that one good joke. And then I'm like, and that should open up a conversation about the topic. And it's like, I never have that.
Right, you know? Right. So, yeah, but you just keep firing jokes though.
That's but it's kind of sad that like, you know, because there's guys who are really good at that of where it's like, you know, this is like I'm opening the door to the house of this topic.
And now we're going
to
beat up
there's so
the
much stuff in there, you know, I don't seem to get that, you know.
Yeah.
Mulaney's like that. I think Mulaney's so fucking talented.
Mulaney, man, talk about like another beautiful special. That last one he did, man, that looked great, you know.
Yeah, it did.
Some of these are like better looking than movies. I mean, like they're just like the cinematography and all that.
Incredible.
Kind of stuff,
Well, I think those guys have a vision. I think like guys like Mulaney probably entered this business with a bigger view of what this business could be.
He's like I think he has a lot of skill set to that guy. Like, you know, I know he can write, he can do that. So you guys both have like a lot of other talents, you know?
The best part of Mulaney is that he was addicted to coke.
That's the best part.
I think it is just an extra layer on that onion where you go, there's a danger in him.
Right.
There's a, and I like, Mulaney's brilliant, but before I knew that, but when I found that out, I went, I love guys that like running their finger through the flame. It, like, I don't know. It's always been...
It's the darkness.
I love darkness. The darkness. Like the Artie, edge. When Artie, you know...
Artie Lang?
Artie Lang.
He's a very good friend.
I love Artie Lang. I'll always love Artie Lang because you know that there's a part of Artie that's a little deeper than Artie, he's letting you in on sometimes.
Artie's when, you know, I was like, be real and all that stuff. Is there nobody realer than him?
Nobody.
And I've seen, you know, like Artie is totally sober. I can tell you that with sincerity. And even though he's going through some hard times, you know, he like would never pull back from like, he tells his stories are worth listening to and they're like exciting. But I've seen him done it in front of today's, I guess you could say, woke crowd.
Yeah.
And they're like, What is this? What? Like all the things he says, you know, like a lot of it is so, you know, whatever. I guess they can't deal with it. They don't want to hear it. That's basically, you
know? It's like too honest.
It's also so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, you can't really like, I mean, this guy really has lived a life. So
he's kind of set up the prototype for the way a lot of us podcast. Because when he was on Stern,
he's great on the mic.
Dude. Yeah.
No one's better than him.
No one. Yeah. I remember driving from the Borgata into New York to get a flight home, listening to Stern, and they were talking, and I think it was the time he opened up about using heroin.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, he's telling us this? Like, this is, like, that kind of vulnerability, though.
Yeah, well, you know, people love him, and I think there's also the flip side of having, like, a fanatical crowd like that, which is like, you don't want to disappoint him. I'm sure you have the same thing.
Yeah.
So. You know, you don't want to let them down. You know, you got to be there for them all the time. So
Artie's the fucking best, man. Nice. I love that guy.
He's awesome.
I remember that. I can remember little things in your career. I don't know. Did you ever have, probably not the equivalent, but like first person to ever compliment me on a joke was Jim Norton. I remember when Artie Lang followed me on Twitter. I remember when Norm MacDonald, the first time I met Norm MacDonald. Like, I remember those moments. Right.
Well, I love that you brought up Norton because I was just talking about him too, that he doesn't get enough props. He really is a great comic. So.
Amazing. Oh, yeah, no, brilliant. We've talked about it. We've talked about it.
Yeah, like his stuff is really good.
It's really good.
And I see him at the Cellar, you know, like he goes on way earlier than me. He has a radio show and all that. But like when I get to see him, I always want to see like his new stuff because he's working on new stuff. And he doesn't, like I pander to the crowd sometimes, you know, hey, what do you got to do? This kind of stuff. He never does that. He just does what he wants to do. And the same thing like, you know, like Ari Shaffir, who also goes on late at the Cellar. Like, I go, like, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in a late spot on an off night. Here I am, like, I'm just, like just basically going, you know, nuts, you know, up here. But he's working on actual material, you know?
So, I think Ari is underrated in comedy. He is a true comic spirit.
Yeah.
Like, flawed at times because everything for him is about, I was trying to tell a joke. As upset as you've gotten at him, the things you've done, he always has this good intention of like, yeah, but we're comics.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what we're supposed to do.
I'd put it this way. He's a great skier. You know, he skis.
Yeah.
And for our people, that is a big, that was a ceiling that needed to be crashed. And no, he really is always fun to watch. And like, he doesn't take the easy road. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
So what are you guys thinking like for this year? I mean, like just more touring, right?
No, I'm taking time off.
But you were overseas, so right?
Yeah, I started overseas in Asia, but last year I did Australia, South America, and Europe. Yeah.
How was South America?
It was awesome. I did Argentina, I did a show in Chile, and I did Mexico City. Mexico City, by the way, is just like doing a show in Houston. I mean, it was same amount of Mexicans.
More like El Paso. Yeah.
It was but like full fluency. So like when you do like Chile, we did Santiago and we did Buenos Aires, Argentina. You get people that are, they know the show's advertised to be in English and they come and they get it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a level of fluency. You forget that like Mexico City, you know, they're so close to the States that you have like a lot more fully bilingual people. So
Mexico City is an international city.
I've
run into comics from Mexico City in New York and like, they're like, we got our own scene down there. We
also a fucking impressive city.
Yeah, like for sure.
You got like that city is massive and it's like it has everything that you would want in like a New York or LA. It's huge,
cool.
It's very cool.
I can't leave the country because of my mom. Like she has dementia, so I'm always afraid that like I'll be away when she's doing something, you know.
Sure.
She's in the gun cabinet.
You would love to do a show there.
Yeah, no, I love the international stuff I've done. I would say the crowds were like the smallest part of it because it's just you're in another country. Yeah, now, you know.
Have you done Asia?
Never done. I've only done what USO tours, mostly the Middle East.
Yeah,
and then whatever I did on the Insomniac show, we always did shows like we did Japan. I guess
you have to do UK though.
I've done that years ago. Okay. Yeah, but like I heard their scene there is like exploded to the point like I wouldn't even recognize it now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys move there from the from the States and they.
Patrice was going to move there at one point.
Oh, how cool would that have been?
Because he it was right around like when I was probably 27. He was like he was getting big in Amsterdam and in the UK. People loved him.
Yeah,
and he was like, you know, maybe the, I remember we were at doing Edinburgh, and he's like, maybe this is the move. Like maybe. They seem to get me here and
really,
yeah. And then just shortly after that, O&A really took off for him.
Yeah.
But I think he still did. He dated a chick in the UK for a long time.
I don't know about living there. That would be kind of like a lot, but I think, you know, Stanhope would go there for weeks and they like were, you know, reviewing his shows and all that kind of stuff. There was a lot of pressure on him, but he always said like, you know, it was a cool scene, you know?
Yeah. But it's a different vibe. It was a different vibe of stand up back then. Because it was very much like everyone had a new hour. Their hours were thematic. And
yeah.
They were like, and it was like, and it was a lot of puns.
Oh, yeah.
I remember me, Voss, and Patrice watched this comedian. And I remember Patrice's mouth was open. He's like, I don't get it. And he was like, and I was like, yeah, I didn't really get it either. But Patrice was just like.
Did you ever do Melbourne International Comedy Festival?
Never. We never had that kind of cash to go to these like other places. But
we went. I did that one in 2011, and it's huge, you know? The Melbourne Festival is huge.
Yeah.
And there's like 300 shows going on, like, in a night. It's fucking wild. It takes over the city. And there's a lot. It's funny because, like, international acts, like, some of them, they'll be like, you know, it's their show that year. They're like, I had a show last year. This year's show is about my dad. Like, like the fucking
hour. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, that's like... Oh, that's not my scene. Yeah. That kind of like long form storytelling.
Yeah, it's like but it's also like.
But Jimmy Carr is a joke guy. Like
he's a joke guy.
Him and I know him, and I like Jimmy, and I like the fact that he like slams out those jokes, and he also comes up with a new hour every year too.
It's a lot of joke writing.
So, but these long form like Iliad, you know, kind of things that they're doing over there. I don't know about that.
No, it's a different thing.
What's that?
Bone broth? Would you like some bone broth?
No, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's got some kick to it.
Will that stop the rains?
No. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve your efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Let me tell you something. You'd be wise to find a better way to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. That is how you run a smart business. It is how we try to run business here at Birdie Boy. And I know it's how we do it over at YMH. It is a no-brainer. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/bears. 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 The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code BEARS. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook. With code BEARS, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Tom and I are intermittent fasting.
Wow. Oh, you guys really are on it.
We're trying to lose weight.
I think you've lost some weight.
I have lost weight. Since I last saw you, I definitely lost weight. But I just was like.
Do you guys have a bed or something?
No, we're doing a 5K. You want to do our 5K?
Are you guys going to get so thin that you both can wear the same pair of pants at the same time?
One in each leg?
We would be great conjoined twins comics.
That'd be great, yeah.
Like if we could get conjoined. If I die, my liver goes out, take just my head, sew it onto your shoulder, and tour with me.
That's a great idea. Those.
You mean like a side head?
Yeah, like a
those,
side head.
Those conjoined
facing
twins.
The other direction, so you can't hear. I'm off mic. Turn me around, Tom. And then
no, but he's the back in the day guy. But back in the day, a guy could say this.
Those conjoined twins that are teachers, they're married to different guys.
Yeah,
isn't that wild?
Where's their Hulu deal?
I think they actually have one.
Wait, they're teachers.
You're doing the bone broth now. Yeah. What kind of exercise are you guys doing?
I lifted this morning.
I lifted this morning.
And then I run.
And then some MMA in the evening.
Sometimes, yeah. When I do two of those, yeah. Yeah.
I was...
Do you ever run?
No, I have a bad knee, and I'm pretty much COPD at this point.
Yeah.
I jump rope till someone knocks on the window. Like, you know, like when you do it in a hotel and somebody like knocks, like, yeah. Could you stop doing that thing in there?
When was your first cigarette?
I grew up, I was like bronchitis and all kind of stuff. So I would say in my 20s is when I really got hooked into it.
Shit.
But the, I smoked before that, but it was really like I'm standing in front of a comedy club or I'm in a club. And like back then you could smoke inside in bars and all that kind of stuff. So it just was so natural. And I was just thinking about it when I was standing and smoking in front of San Diego where, you know, I have plenty of company down there on the street late at night. I mean, it's really pretty off the hook.
In the gas lamp district.
So it's just like, you know, this is like, if I had the time back of smoking in front of places, that would be great. You know, I spent years, I think, doing that. That and also waiting on flights. Like, that's probably 2 or 3 years of my life, I think, you know.
I think, I wish I had never drank on planes.
Yeah, like, I don't know how you could do that, because I never did that.
For real?
Never.
Wait, what was your drinking like?
I would drink after the shows.
That's
and like,
it.
You know, like late. But, you know, I'm like kind of raised like, you know, work, you know, like worker guy. Yeah. So it's like, you know, no matter how hungover you are, we want you in there in the morning and like, you know, don't puss out on us. So that's how I always felt about it. But, you know, let's face it, like once you're able to do something, you'll do it. So when you drink on a plane, though, what happens when you get like, hey, I feel like, you know, going. Well, is it a private plane or?
No. I mean, I drink on those, too. But I
could see. But on a regular.
Oh, I can't. I have a hard time staying sober on a private plane. And I'm not flying private anymore because I'm trying not to drink on flights. And I can't not drink on a private flight.
Yeah, I think it's built for that.
Yeah, know? And so I got to be honest with you, they're more steady on the big planes. Like I have a fear of flying. Yeah, I have a real bad fear of flying.
Mm.
And so it started when I was younger. My dad's the one that started it. I was 18. I was getting ready to go to college. We were flying from the islands back to the States. And I was nervous and I had cried on the flight there.
You cried?
I still cry on planes from anxiety. And if I don't drink, not less now, but bad when I was younger. And my dad was like, Jesus Christ, just have a fucking drink already. And I was like, what? And he goes, it'll relax you. So my dad got me a drink and I murdered it. And then he got me another one and I murdered it. I was like 18. And I was like, I don't feel any fear anymore. And I got on the plane and I was like, well, this is what I'll do. And so I drank. I've always drank on flights.
What was your fear that it's going to crash?
Of death.
Always
fear of death.
Really. I feel claustrophobic on these planes. That's my biggest fear is that we'll all get in the lock the door and go like, guess what? We're going to be here for 12 hours. And it's happened to me, like, where I've been there for many hours. And I'm like, you know, you people don't get it. I'm claustrophobic. Like, I could flee. That would be a great time for a drink. Like, really.
You never drink on planes?
No, that was not my thing. Only when I drive. Hello? Sorry. No,
my favorite thing in the world is to get nice and lit on a plane, start listening to music and writing down ideas. I love
it. Oh, really?
I don't know. It just is really like, it gets me inspired. Like, I feel creative and I feel loose. I feel comfortable.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And so
you've done other, like, have you done parachuting or gliding or all that kind of stuff?
Skydived.
Right? So that's pretty amazing for guys afraid of being on a plane.
I did it for money.
Kind of crazy.
Oh, okay.
I did it for a TV show.
Was it a TikTok challenge?
I had to jump out of a plane over Montana. And Montana is, not everywhere spread out, but for some reason, it looked real spread out. Like, it looked like you could see forever. And that anxiety, that's agoraphobia.
Yes.
So I get agoraphobia scuba diving, too. Just the idea
that
endlessness of it freaked me out, and the plane was bouncing around everywhere, and it took forever to get to 15,000 feet.
Wow.
And it was a tiny plane, and I was fucking terrified. And that was the last time I jumped out of a plane. I'll never jump out of a plane again.
I did it one time too.
You did do it?
Yeah. Have you done it?
No.
Wait, when
you should do it once, I think.
You did it for the military?
No. I did it because I was 17 and me and my brother wanted to do it, and I had really cool parents. They're like, well, like, sign this. They didn't even know what it was, and it was the release, and they let us do it. So,
I mean, how old's your brother?
My brother's two years older than me. I have another one's 2 years younger than me.
Really?
All white, if that was a question.
That's
all right?
A big deal.
We'll be right back. So we were like, you know, that kind of kid, you know, like mix it up and that kind of stuff. But I would say now, like zip lining, I wouldn't do that. You have young kids. Do they do that?
Yeah. Georgia and I both went zip lining.
These kids are pretty brave when you think about some of the stuff they do, all that like parkour stuff where they're climbing over stuff and jumping.
Georgia
stuff.
Just started rock climbing.
Wow.
And that's something you do when you're young. When you get older,
yeah,
I think you have a fear. I've been stuck on a rock. Like where you can't get your next grip and you're stuck and you're just frozen. And that's fucking pretty terrifying.
Well,
and
now I'm at that age where I'll only do that stuff if I survive cancer. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Hello, Mount Everest. I made it.
Yeah.
I'm still here, everyone.
Wait, are your brothers funny?
Nah, you know, we're kind of like worker people, you know, like we're like hardcore worker people. My sister's funny. My mom was funny, but she has dementia now, so she just laughs, you know, that crazy laugh with no light in her eyes. But I don't know. Do you think that's part of it? Like your family's funny?
Oh, my sister Cottie's way funnier than I am.
Really?
And my sister Annie is, when you put us in a group, I'm the very least funny, which isn't shocking, but.
Wow.
I've always been better at being able to be funny to strangers, like, but not with like my family.
Uh-huh.
My sister Cottie is fucking hysterical. I remember when she moved out here, I was like, you have to do stand up. You have to do stand up. And she didn't. I don't know what she does now, but she like works at Fox or Disney or something.
You don't know what she does.
You don't know what she does.
I know what she kind of does, but I always say it wrong. So if it's not about me, I don't really listen a ton.
My dad was funny. I mean, like, you know, I feel like if you live in a house where like, you know, like super sarcastic, verbally abusive, like the funny follows, you know,
yeah.
Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but then there's people like these like cold houses, you know, where it's like, you know, my dad's resting. Don't go in the study.
See, I think my mom is really funny. She's really funny.
Yeah, your mom is funny.
She's funny as shit, but I don't think my sisters are that funny.
I think your sisters are fucking hilarious.
Yeah. So,
have you ever met sisters, Dave?
No. What do they do?
Are fucking
something
awesome.
At Fox or something?
I don't know. Some network shit. No, they're kind of funny. Like
they're bigger personalities than him. You're more like your dad.
Yeah,
his dad was more like a funny but quiet dude, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was funny.
Quiet. He was a quiet man.
I don't think he was funny. He loved jokes. He loved jokes. He liked joke. You know what I mean? Like what's like if I told a story on stage, he was like, what is that? Like,
wow, yeah, he's a joke guy, huh?
He's a joke guy for sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm. But I mean, you know, he's a different generation. Like those guys grew up on street jokes and like.
And those party vinyl, you know, like they would have like put on a Red Fox or something like that.
He brought me to a dinner one time with his friends. This is like, I'd been doing stand-up probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And like these older guys, these guys were like in their 70s and 80s. And they're like, all right, like, go. Like, let's hear some of your stuff.
Oh, from you?
Yeah.
You? Oh, that, I hate that.
And I was like, what? And they're like, well, what's one of your jokes? And I was like, it's not like that. And they're like, what do you mean? And I go, yeah, it's, you know. And then he goes, well, I'll tell you what. So he starts telling me, yeah, like, you know, it's two blondes and they're hanging out in a bar. And you're like, oh, okay. And they're like, now you go. And I was like, no, I don't have that.
We all know those jokes. They're really hard to come up with, you know, like yeah. those like three guys and a this and yeah. a that. And I was, because I was telling somebody else, I was like, you know, that's almost like, you know, like for some reason, all those jokes have been written already and there's right. no new ones. Like it's really that's hard true. To come up with them, you know?
Yeah, stand there's up, like no
stand, I called Stan up one day and I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm having a grapefruit and vodka trying to write a knock-knock joke.
Yeah.
And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, I figure we got to be as good as those guys, right? And I was like, I guess. And he was like, so we got to come up with a knock. Like, I'm just sitting here trying to write a knock. And I thought that was like.
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool. It's cool the way Doug's brain works where he's like, just going like, I'm not going to work on. I'm going to just try to see if I can write a knock knock joke.
He, I think I said this the last time we got together was that he was always my favorite comic. He always represented like, you know, like he was always ahead of the game, if you ask me. Like he did his specials and then he did his own specials. He's like, I'm not going to wait on them to like, and I'm not going to censor myself. And like, I'm going to release them myself and all that kind of stuff. And he also like did the book thing before anybody did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And his road is no one does it like him with that one show, get in a van, move to the next town. It's like real vaudeville style. Yeah, you know, he's not doing amphitheaters. He's not doing theaters. He's doing clubs, bars, car washes, whatever it is. And then he moves on to the next one. So, you know, back in the day when we used to party and everything like that, like, you know, we had super connection that way. Now, you know, his Bisbee, you know, the Bisbee experience is like, you know, I'm really glad that he kind of found his thing, you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know if he ever comes here. Does he yeah. come to LA? Because he won't come to New York. I know I've asked him a million times, like, come by the cellar and go on. I'll bring you on. He won't. He doesn't want to do it. So
he ran his new hour at the store and he was. I went in the back and watched. It was fucking amazing. It was amazing. And, you know, he's just self-deprecating. He's like, ah. And I was like, he had, have you heard the joke he has about the telemarketer?
No.
It's, I couldn't do it because I'd fuck it up because it's so complex. But basically, it is leveraging racism versus race. And he forces the audience to pick which one they like more.
Yeah. Now, Doug doesn't pull the punches. That's for
no,
sure.
No, he's so fucking good. And he's someone, when he tours, I always say he had probably the best taste in comics, too. Like, when he did the Unbookables, he discovered Sean Rouse for me.
Yeah,
Sean Rouse was, like, Leanne calls him a scoundrel. But like he had a mischievous look in his eyes.
Yes, he's still in my mind one of the best joke writers because yeah. he had a lot of problems. You know, he had rheumatoid arthritis, serious drug, you know, and all that kind of enabling. And like most of the people that I know who knew Sean, and we all were like, he got us sober. I actually paid to put him in rehab. So the people who did get rheumatoid arthritis go like, now I get him. Now yeah. I know why. This is so painful yeah. all the time yeah. that this poor guy was living with this.
Yeah.
And he had it when he was like 17, so 18, yeah. whatever it was, 19 years old. His whole adult life was with this thing. And for him to like still do the kind of stuff that he did, he's an amazing guy. I'm really lucky I was able to tour with him as much as I did.
He bit me one time.
Did he ever like talk about drinking? I mean, like this guy really knew how to do it.
I used to look.
Have you ever seen a guy drink with a claw? Like his hand. Do you ever see his hands?
Yes. there was a thing about me that I've always liked. I've always, anyone who's a drinker, I always wanted to have a moment. Like Zach used to be a drinker. Galifianakis.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a fun fucking drinker.
He's another guy I think is like a talent beyond, you know, like there's talented people and then there's Zach. Zach really is super talented.
I walked know? Into his, he stayed at one of the Gramercy Park Hotel. It's an older hotel in New York that hadn't been renovated yet, and it had a real 1970s vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember partying with him, and then a bunch of us went back to his hotel room, and he was like, "And it's kind of a look into Zach's brain, but like he kind of pulled me off the side, and he's like, can I show you why I love this place? Because he is like an artist too.
Yeah.
He was like, come here. And he took me into the bathroom, and there was a bottle opener next to the toilet, and it was put on the wall, and it was a marble wall, like a tile wall.
Yeah. What hotel is this?
The Gramercy Park Hotel. Okay. And he goes, they had a bottle opener in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, that's how they used to do it.
I've made it.
And I was like, wow. And then hung out with him all. And he was never like, the last time I ran into him was at Brody's funeral. And he's obviously a huge movie star. And he came up and he's like, Bert, Zach Galifianakis. And I was like, I definitely remember you.
Yeah.
We all know who you are, Zach. And he was like, well, it's good. I think he quit drinking.
You know, I know Brody for years. Oh, Zach?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's.
Brody quit drinking too.
But yeah. But like, you guys probably know, you probably spent more time with Brody than I did, but I feel like every time I was with Brody Stevens, yeah, it was memorable because
totally,
really just immediately we'd lit light into each other, and like, he was always good with the back and forth, and just his like, you know, he used to do audience warm-up.
Amazing. Oh,
so yeah, like, he was used to going on to like people with no reaction, cold, you know? Cold. So seeing him do his act and the way he would do that, like, man, like, where it's always about him. I loved it. Another guy, like, just sad, you know?
You ever hear the story of how they sold his TV show to HBO?
Mm-mm. Well, Zach.
Zach walked in and they go, so what are we trying to sell? And Zach's like, there's no way to explain Brody to you. And they're like, well, and Brody's in the room. And they go, like, give us an example. And he goes, Brody, top five streets in L.A. And he goes, Sepulveda, Satakoy, and just named his five favorite streets. He goes, tell us why you love them. And he just went off on the streets in L.A. and they sold it in the room. And they were like, I don't know if they know what we bought.
They didn't know what they sold even.
Well,
he would connect with me always whenever I got in the store about Starbucks, because he knew I liked, like, and sports, because he knew I liked sports.
Yeah.
So he would be like, do you have your Starbucks today? And I was like, yeah. He's like, do you get it when you travel? I go, always. He's like, that's what I like about them. Consistency. And I was like, yeah, it's very consistent. And then it would always be like, how are your teams doing? The FSU win this weekend? And I was like, you know, they lost. And he'd be like, too bad. He's like, getting ready for spring ball. And he would get excited about spring ball coming up. So you just talk about football with me, baseball, because he loved baseball.
Yeah, he was a baseball player.
He was a great baseball player.
I didn't know that about him at
legit,
all.
Like, he was a legit pitcher. Was he a pitcher?
Legit pitcher.
And then, yeah.
But how many years ago is this now? Like, 5, 10? Well, I mean, like, how many?
Yeah, now we're talking. I mean, the conversations we were having were 10 years ago. I think he's been gone, what, 5, 6 years? Something like that?
It was before the pandemic. It was before all that stuff. Yeah. It seems there's a lot of mental angst out there right now in the scene here, you know?
Do you feel like, do you have self-imposed pressure to be good?
No, my pressure is to come up new material every time I go on stage. It's like, have something new, just even a little bit, because I think I said this before, is that when I started, I was the doorman at the original improv in New York, and I would see the same guys go up. This is like, there was no audience there, 20 people at the most. Like, comedy is dead. It's dead. I think Dice now is doing movies. He wasn't even touring at that point, whatever it was. But it was like, you know, these people come in and these guys would just go up and do the same jokes every night. And I said to myself, if I ever get spots like these guys, I'm going to try something new all the time. And I've done that where, like, even if it's the smallest thing or just say it differently.
Yeah.
I tried to make the most of every stage time. And I think that's important, especially for guys like us, since we get on a lot. And for the new people that once they get to that point, they should always like try and push it. You know, little steps lead to big things. So that's what I think.
Yeah, I remember, because I've told this story, how I still remember that when I did one of those weekends with you, I would watch your set. And, you know, at like the 30-minute mark, it would be this one bit, right? I forget what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get to the punchline, and it was like, it's show one, I saw it. And like, it worked. Like, big laugh.
Yeah.
And then show two, you switched it out.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, he switched it. And then show three, you switched it, but to another punchline. And show four. And I was like, oh, every show, this bit has a different line you're trying.
Well, I always feel like, you know, people always go punchlines. I'm always like, it's setups. You know, like, I feel like at this point, coming up with new setups is so difficult. That's why I love that you incorporate all that family stuff into it. And it's funny. It's not like one of these where like, okay, now we're going to hear about a family. No, it's funny. It's not PC family stuff. Yeah. It's real family stuff. And I like that. And I'm like kind of jealous in a way. I'm like, wow, you have all these different topics to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you go with your family to the ice cream museum, it means something different than when I go alone. But yeah, thanks for noticing that, because of that course. To me was like, just like, it keeps it fresh. It keeps the joke fresh for me, but it also keeps me on my toes, you know?
Yeah.
You had a joke when I was real young that I watched you like pick apart, but the whole, you would put it all over the place, and it was about hitting a man in the head with a hammer. And you were like, and it was fun to go watch and sit in the back and find, like, especially watch different shows and go, oh, the hammer's here now. The hammer's there.
Right.
I've said this a million times, but like, I was that guy that got 15 minutes and was like, good, I'm set. And then I worked with you that weekend in Miami, and I did like Thursday. All I wanted you to do is go, great set. Thursday, and I got off stage. You're like, how were they? I go, they're good. You're going to kill. And you killed. And then Friday, first show, I got off. You're like, how'd you do? Or how were they? I said, good. You're going to kill. And then you killed. And Friday, late show, I go out and I was like, I just go, they're good. And you go, how about writing some new jokes? And I went, what? You went, you're doing the same act. If you want me to watch you, like, write some new stuff. And I went, oh, in my head, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get like gifted a career by being funny for the same 15. If I want someone like Attell to watch me, I went up and I did a brand new 15 minutes that was okay. And you walked up, you came up to me and you had notes and you were like, oh, keep, I like that. And I was like, oh, and you said that weekend, you said to me, now is the best time because no one's watching you. You're not selling the tickets. You get to do whatever the fuck you want. One day you're going to be headlining and you're going to have to murder. And if you don't know how to write now, you're never going to be able to write then.
I said all that?
Yeah. And I, dude,
wow.
It stuck with me.
Yeah.
It stuck with me. I featured.
Mean, but I got to say one thing. First of all, I apologize.
No, it wasn't mean at all. It's what you want to hear.
This is the story you should have said to me while I was washing your tour bus. Like, and then you said, if you're ever going to headline, go ahead, sir. Yes.
No, but I remember I featured that whole year I featured. And especially when I featured at places where I was like, Laughs Unlimited in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, the feature gig's a gig they're going to give anybody.
Yeah.
Like, I should just be writing right now.
Well, there's two things to get out of it. One is that like you get it, you totally get the whole thing of the feature. Like, you can do no wrong, really.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you don't have to close, you don't have to open, so you might as well push it a little bit. But the other thing is that, like, now with these younger comics, like, getting into the club is so difficult unless they have a following that, like, they want to murder. And I'll say to my guys, I go, kill it up there, like, crush it, and like, try and get them to look at you so that they'll bring in. But it always comes back to the tick, you know, like tickets and like, I'm sorry, we got TikTok guys coming in that can sell out the room and all that kind of stuff. So, but it's cool that you got that. Some guys, they never get that. They never get that, whatever, like, use the stage time, you know, really use it. And like, I think that's really half of it. Cause I wasn't funny, right? It took me years to like get comfortable and get funny and then to figure out what I'm kind of like, how to put it all together and all that kind of stuff. And like, you know, when people go like, so do you think a character is important? I'm like, no, consistency is important.
Yeah.
Be consistently funny. And once you have that confidence, then you'll be able to break it and like start talking about all your truths and all that kind of stuff. But you have to be consistently funny. You got to be able to like, you know, okay, this is happening in the room right now. I'm able to handle that. And a lot of these kids are getting a free pass on this whole, like, you know, like, people sit there and they, that's why this crowd work thing really kind of like, you know, I was talking to somebody else and I'm like, you know, crowd work is something you did when it was bad, when the crowd sucked.
Yeah.
And now it's become this art form, this like, you know, another like figure skating at the Olympics, you know, it's like another event.
Yeah.
So, but I always feel that like, you know, the more you can, the more, you know, and we've all done this where we do a joke we know is going to tank and then the recovering, like learning to recover is important too.
That's a whole thing. No,
it's funny, but especially like crowd work, like, the way I used to do crowd work on the road was, and I think some people still do. Some people, Mark Norman's really good at it.
He's
like
very good.
In the moment, I think I write so much. Him and Sam Morrell.
They are machine. They really are like the guys when I go like, what are you doing? And Sam's like, I'm almost there on another hour. I'm like, already? How do you do that?
Yeah, he is a machine.
But I used to do crowd work where you'd ask them the question, but you already had your joke in your pocket.
Yeah.
And then people are like, you're amazing at crowd work. I'm like, I don't know.
Well, they don't know. They don't know the trick for sure. Yeah. No, you told me one. So I featured for you 1 year, and then the next year I featured for you at the same club.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that you paid attention to what I was doing. So in the second year when I got off stage, you go, are you doing some of the same jokes as last year? And I was like,
I really said that?
Yeah. And I felt like a cold sweat start. And I was like, what? And you're like, what, do you want to be an actor or something? And I was like, what? No. And you're like, you got it right, man. And I was like, okay. But it was good.
I really don't think I said these things the way you're saying I'm saying.
No, that's why you know that's why we like you.
Oh, okay.
Because
here's the thing. The reason we remember it is, because it's you, but because it has an impact and because it was true. Like, it was good advice. Like you cared.
I
gave somebody advice.
Did I hand you a guitar? That would be like the ultimate insult.
I did it one time to a guy and I thought I was doing the right thing. I was headlining. He was emceeing.
Yeah.
So there was still a middle after him. And we had done most of the weekend. And I go, hey, man, I got to tell you something. I go, I'm just telling you this because you should know this. You're emceeing on this isn't a showcase show. This is like a headline show. And you're opening with like all this crowd work. Because he was like talking to the crowd. I was like, you can't really, you don't really get that to make that call. Like, you're kind of dictating. I go, for the feet. It's not even for me. I go, like, you're putting that feature kind of in a weird place.
Right.
Because the crowd thinks that like that this is the thing now. Because you're doing it for like your whole 10 minutes.
Okay.
And he was like, what? I go, well, there's some people that would like just have you not do the rest of the shows. Like,
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like, you're setting up the show to be something because you've decided, and you can't do that in that spot.
Mm.
And yeah, you could do crowd work, but like you have to have written material.
Sure. Oh, that's true. Yes. You know? But I will say one thing, and like, I apologize if it came off as Kurt. If I did say that to you, it was because I think that, you know, I remember now, like, when you guys did work with me and how you were crushing it. And it really has to do with, like, you know, when guys are like, you know, a lot of people feature because they're not headlining yet.
Yeah.
And like, I bring guys out like that too. And the one thing I will say that I've never said to any opener is that I don't want you doing this joke or that joke or whatever.
Never.
The only time on my special when I said, don't bring that up just because I want to do that joke. That, other than that, they know they can talk about whatever they want to talk about. Or the guest spots, they do whatever. And I will adjust around it, which adds another level of like, working out in a way. Like, well, this guy, you know, talked about whatever. I can't talk about it now. So
yeah, but I look back on that when you said that, I look back on that as like a turning point. Like, it's something that I needed to hear, because here's the truth. Like, if I hadn't heard it then, who knows how much longer it would have been before somebody had said that.
And especially someone you didn't respect.
Exactly.
Like, if someone you didn't respect,
that's a big deal.
Because I've had people say like shitty things when I was a feature to me, and I was like, oh, you're doing that out of insecurity. And then there's people I respect that you're like, oh, you're saying that because you want me to be better. And no one does that. No one's like, yo, I think you're good. You can be better. This is what you need to do if you want to be
better. Well, if you're going to be like, well, we are, like, we're different, like, you know, like, I'm a club comic. You guys are, you know, like, you guys deserve everything that's come your way, and you've earned everything that's come your way.
Not really.
But it all starts in the clubs. And not to make this whole, like, whatchamacallit. Let's name a movie, The Blind Side. It's like, this is about, like, you know, the work of comedy, and like, it's not easy, and it's not going to be a victory lap. And for a long time, you're going to have to go like, the only person who cares that I do this is me right now.
Yeah.
And you have to make peace with that. And you have to get out there every night and take the beating that you know, the beating I deserved, which is 7-8 years of being not that funny. And then the beating that I didn't deserve, which is just like, hey, can I get in this club now? Can I headline? Can I do that kind of thing? So I think along the way there's a lot of like easy roads of like, hey, you know what? I know I can always close this way and I'll kill. But the real work of comedy is going like, okay, I got that. Now what's the next thing out there? That scary blank page, you know?
Yeah, I think another guy who like really took it, like knows how to work for his stuff is Louis, because he'll be like, he's like, you know, once these 15 minutes are down, like, I know they kill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not working on them. It's just like masturbatory up there to like, you know.
True.
And I feel like he really uses stage time to work.
For sure. I mean, that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like all these shows during the week, that's what that's about. And the fact that you guys go out, you don't have to do that. There's a lot of big headliners that the only time they're going out is when there's a check. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I understand that too. You've done it, you've made it. Why screw it up? You know?
Yeah.
Do you, what, like, I think Tom and I are pretty transparent with our wants out of doing specials. Like, I've always wanted to do bigger venues. I've always wanted,
you're good in a big venue too.
I love arenas.
It's not easy. Anything.
I love arenas.
I know, but it's not easy.
It's not easy, but it's a different muscle. But like, what do you want out of this special? Like, because you're someone
what do I want out of it?
Like, because like I would love a Dave Attell arena tour. I would love
never
Dave.
I would never happen. Do it. I never sold tickets, and I never would do it. I think that you know, like, even the theater work that I've done, I'm like, this is cool. But look, I only did one show tonight. I feel a little whatever. But it, for me, I got bills, so I got to pay the bills. But I'm very happy with my career and where I am. I get to play clubs wherever I want, when I want. And I, you know, my crowd is really good. Like, I mean, people always talk about like, you know, like the crowd, a lot of people have been with me for decades now and they really do get these jokes and they really kind of like, even though they always bring up the old jokes you don't want to do, it's still the fact that they are like part of the comedy universe because they've all seen you. They've seen all the names we've talked about. And like, those are the people that like, when you say like the super fans, that's who those people are. So what do I want out of it? I want to keep working. And like, I want to hit that 40-year mark. And then, you know, I guess I'll jump off the Hyatt. And, no, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys want? I mean,
it's like, so funny because you're not a guy who wants to increase his ticket price. You're not a guy that wants to do bigger venues.
Yeah.
You're not a guy who, like, you're just, it's like almost like a, it's almost like an underground rapper or like, a,
yeah,
like
yeah.
You're like, you just are. Like, it's the coolest thing about you putting out a special on Netflix, in my opinion, is, like, everyone's going, I hope it trends. I hope I can move on to theaters. Everyone. I mean, yeah, and no, I love Sam Rell and Mark Norman and Shane Gillis, but those were their ones.
Look at Lady Mary here with the glass piece on the cigarette. When did that start?
I'm sorry, everyone.
I'm sorry. So sophisticated.
Collecting some data on myself there.
That's the cool thing about you.
So you wouldn't though
on
you
Netflix.
You put out
the no. I would like I worked the theater in Atlanta, and I hadn't been in Atlanta in a long time because the Punchline there closed.
Yeah.
And I've done the restaurant that's the new Punchline. I've done that, but I hadn't been there so long. And they're like, "Well, let's try a theater play," and it was fantastic. We added another show, and I almost sold that one out. But at the end of the day, I know that like I'm best in the clubs, but the theater thing is something that like I guess I should have given more time to because you know how it is. Like you don't start out where you're selling out theaters. You start out where like, hey, it's half full. I'm not making any money tonight, you know? And same thing with the Netflix thing. I'm not doing it for the money because they're not paying me that much money. I lost money making the special.
Yeah.
So it's really about like the jokes have been done. Now get them out and hopefully there won't be so much blowback on it. And then, you know, you do like you have to start the next hour. And like, I'm telling you like these short jokes and the guys who do short jokes, God help you because it really is like, oh man, like I thought I ran like my new, all the jokes I don't have, 15 minutes. And I'm like, wow, that's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not even there. It's not even like the marathon just began. They just shot the gun, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's scary, you know? But I mean, once you have something, I guess like for you guys, like, do you have a plan, like a special every year, every other year, you know?
I mean, because of the pandemic, the turnaround for my last one was 3 years. And I think that's a
good time.
That's a good turnaround time for, I think it's better. I think it actually made it better.
Depends what you're going for. I know you're working on one now, right?
Yeah,
how are you feeling about it?
Not good.
I mean, frightening, isn't it?
I feel it really is scary because I just felt good about it for the first time. Tom and I worked together in Vegas and I had to follow Tom. And so I really, for the first time really sat and was like,
I'm
following Tom, I got to really put it together. And I only did 30 minutes. We only had to do 30, 35 minutes. And it went well. And I felt confident for the first time. But now I just feel confident about the first 30 minutes. Hey,
but you did 30 minutes of new. It's all new. That's all great. New. That's all new. So cool.
I'm doing an hour and 20 of new on the road right now. All of it is good, but it's not. There's like a skinnying up process of like shrink wrapping these stories, making them a lot tighter. And then my big challenge has always been, because I think ultimately when I started in New York, I really respected all the joke writers, is sprinkling in enough short jokes that you can sit
for
through
the stories. Yeah.
And so that's, for me, ultimately, it's not even about time. It's more about knowing when the hour's due. that I start focusing. Because if you give me 3 years, I'm going to fuck around on stage
right.
for fucking 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to keep writing and keep writing and keep writing and keep writing. And then at a certain point, I go, all right, time to commit to some bits and then make them good.
You know what happened to me at the Vegas thing? Because we had to do shorter sets, is I would want to go from like this bit to that bit.
Yeah.
That I ended up editing like on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, that's actually a better version of that bit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I didn't do it the long-winded way.
Right.
And then I trimmed it down. And then in my head, I was like, I think that's the way I should do that bit.
Cool.
You know? So that was actually kind of cool.
And like, you know, I give you guys credit because Super Bowl weekend in Vegas, like, can you, I mean, like, I'm sure they were super fans of comedy, but
pandemonium.
But it must have been chaos. Like, you know, just the energy, you know, vibrating through the room must have been nuts.
We closed on the national anthem.
Well, there you go.
Let's just say we pulled out every gun.
Both of them. I hope so. I'm walking right now.
The lineup too was Trevor Wallace, Bobby Lee, Shane Gillis, me, Bert.
What, you close it again? Dude, man, that's balls.
Dave, no, it's not. It was panic, and then when we were doing sound check.
After I heard how he wanted to come on stage, I go, you can go last.
Wow.
He's like, I'm going to do a lap around the arena. holding up. I was like, you can go last, dude.
Dude, kept Tom on stage as I took my shirt off. It was still ultimately, I had to follow my own entrance where I was like, well, fuck.
Yeah,
and I was out of breath. So I was like, fuck. But no, I think for a special, I commit a full like 5 months to just, and it's a little, it's, I think it's detrimental to being a parent because I just go, I'm on the road. I'm going to be doing, during Fully Loaded this year, I'm going to do theaters Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and to get ready for the special because I shoot the special right after Fully Loaded. So I'll do theaters Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday because I'm shooting it in a theater and I did my first theater in like probably 2.5 years, 2 years this weekend. And I didn't realize how different an energy an arena is to a theater.
Yeah.
When I do comedy clubs, I noticed that things that work in arenas don't work in comedy clubs. Like small movements sell really big in an arena.
Yes.
And you do it in a club and everyone's not looking at the big screen. Looking at your eyes, everyone. So you're all of a sudden these eye movements that would get pops don't Latin work, and I'm like fuck. And so a larger movement works better in a club,
right?
And I think you're forced to write smarter in a club. I think you can. I think definitely like a setup, like a good joke when it pops in a club, it destroys in an arena.
I'm glad you said that whole thing, because that is so true. Like from either watching guys in an arena or like when I was part of the Madison Square Garden 9/11 thing, I was like, man, it's even the acoustics there are great, but still like the fact that there's like, you know, you can't, there's nothing to grab onto in the clubs. You can see the walls, you know? So like, you know, like at the very least there's exits that you can see in this club, but in the arena, you're like a wash and you are the one little thing in the middle of it. And I was like, you know, what are these people looking at right now? I mean, my jokes worked and I did like, you know, my recorder thing and all that just to do it, I did it. But I was like, the really good guys are the ones who like animate themselves, like really like the eyes, the movements, taking the right pause in a
it's amphitheater. It's a different pause.
A pause is
the timing of the crowd reaction is so like, it takes you know, you must be a master at it by now of like, but initially, that must have thrown you off right away. Like, I said the joke, where are they?
I bombed the first a couple arenas I did. I didn't do great because I'd run through it and I'd talk over myself. I wasn't pacing myself right. And then you go back to theater and you're like, why isn't it? And then when I did a theater, this past weekend, I had Reno. And I was like,
You're too slow.
And I wrote for 15 minutes up front and was like, this feels so much freer. You really got to be on script in an arena a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're the example of the exact opposite. It's like when we did Rochester, I remember you were doing crowd work with the scenery behind us.
Well, that's my thing.
But it was like so fucking brilliant. It was so, it looks like someone went to Brookside Community College, and then there's a huge Brookside Community College in the background. Huge pop, and Big J goes, he's working the town.
Yeah.
Oh, if you didn't like that one, pray to the cross up on the field of the field to the left, and there's a big cross. It was fucking brilliant.
I always like making the room also part of the show, like whatever, or the street or whatever it is, but that to me, when I saw you doing that, because outdoor sucks, let's face it. Outdoor is the worst. But like, if you embrace that suck and really bring it close and give it a big kiss, it's a fun, like, you know, it's a slam down. You know, that's the way I see it.
You murdered on all, like.
Nah, I feel like Shane was the one on that, the one in Queens. Do you remember we did I was like, wow. I mean, like these people, honestly, but you crush it every time.
It was crazy to watch Shane like catch his stride. Like, because I've always thought he was funny. But then within those Fully Loaded dates and to watch him like all of a sudden get to a place where he's just outpacing, like, and he really does. I mean, like, say whatever you want just about being funny, but he writes a lot. He writes a lot. He always has new material and he's always opening on new material. Like shit that I look up to, I go, God damn it. You're opening on that joke.
Yeah.
He's like, well, it's not that strong. So I figure if I put it up front, it'll force me to figure out what's good about it. And you're like,
he's got so many, like, he's an impressionist guy.
Yeah.
And, like, growing up in comedy, like, you know, I was always, like, the impression guy. Like, but his stuff is good.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a few guys that are really good at it. He's one of them for sure, so.
You know, he's someone that.
Yeah, he's super self-deprecating, though.
He's super self-deprecating.
Like, before that show, we were in my room, and I was like, how's your hour? He's like, it sucks. And then he goes, I suck. And then we walked out. So I was like, yeah, that's good.
His pop in Vegas when he went on stage was so fucking insane.
Oh,
so we didn't tell him anyone was on the show. That's so we bring up Bobby Lee. Everyone's like, oh, it's going to be a great show.
And they went crazy for Bobby.
And like, Shane Gillis. And the place, standing ovation to come on stage. And he sat there for probably real time, probably 3.5 minutes of them applauding. And was like, you guys are making me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Wow.
And then he destroyed.
That's another difference between like when I watch guys like him, where they'll like, you know, I always felt the pressure because the way I started comedy was in the real like bad comedy world where like, you know, they say something funny and all that kind of thing where like you had to be funny within the first minute or else you didn't deserve the right to be there.
Yeah.
So that was always the thing of like, you always have to constantly tell them that like, I deserve to be here. That is no longer true in comedy. They'll give you like some time to, you know, like whatever. They'll let people like, I've seen it before where I'm like, why is this person starting with like a slow burn joke when they have other jokes? And it's like, because they can now. Like where in the past, people would have thrown something or they would have, you know, the lights would flicker, you know, something like that. So, you know, that's a different thing. Because back then it was really like, you know, you got to get them right away.
Do you know who I'm going to see today for the first time in like 25 years?
Who?
Dimitri Martin.
I saw him in New York. I hadn't seen him in a long time either.
Yeah. He's doing the show with me one of the shows we're doing at the store together. I started the same day he did. He was immediately so much better than all of us.
He's a talented guy too.
He is such a, today I was on his Instagram just looking at just his jokes. He just posts, you know, jokes from old specials and they're fucking so good.
Yeah.
He's great, so one-liners. Fucking good. Yeah. He's so, who did you start with?
Well, I started with a lot of people who, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, I was there when, like, Louie and Nick DiPaolo and all those guys. But, like, Zach, of course, like, I saw those guys. But they were all younger than me. So, like, I had already been doing comedy before them. I'm trying to think of, like, you know, I guess the people that were of my generation are mostly dead. Like, the Greg Giraldos and the Mitch Hedbergs. And those are the names that, you know. But, there's a million... There was a million people coming and going through that world. But, you know, back then it was, you know, a lot of these guys were trying to get a sitcom and a lot of them were trying to get writing jobs. And it really depended on what you look like. If you were ugly, you're a writer. Yeah. If you're good looking, you were an actor.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of flipped a little bit where it's like, you know, ugly's in or whatever, inclusive, you know, everybody's a part of the party. So, but I always was like, stand up is what I want to do. And, you know, the few times, like, well, I never got to see Sam Kinison live, but he was the guy, like, you know, dude, look at this guy, man. This guy's fucking amazing, you know? And then, like, you know, Bill Hicks, who I did get to meet once or twice, I was like, I'll never be as good as this guy. So, like, there's not even, like, you know, there's no debate about that. But those were the people that, like, yeah, I want to be those guys. And then, Letterman, that was like the thing that like, whoa, I was on Letterman and now I'm booking shows across the country. That has no effect now, those late night things. Nothing. It's all self-produced clips and all that kind of, which is probably better in a way, I guess, you know, because the stuff they would make you do to do those shows, like, you know, Nick Griffin, you know, this guy?
Yeah, of course.
He's done a million of these you know, Tonight shows and all those late night talks and how difficult it is and how much work it takes to put them together. Whereas a TikTok, you could just go like, you know what? I'm going to stick a firecracker in my, you know, and this is going to happen. And that. So it's like, there was a lot of work to that, you know, to really build that kind of like road business, you know? But now I would say that, you know, the people that I started with, a lot of them already moved on to like producing and all that kind of stuff and things like that. It's very few people that can like, you know, like we're all like Don Rickles, you know, they're like, people go to me like, you're like Don Rickles, you're going to tour forever, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I hope I can, sure, you know, like it's not a given that we're all going to be able to do this, you know,
no, for, of course,
forever, you know,
just,
you know,
with
the boom and everything like that, you know, it's great. Like I see like it never ending, but I'm just hoping for all of us, you know, physically, mentally. You know,
I want to do this as long as
taking my shirt off until I'm 70.
Well, you guys are there already. You're drinking that broth, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. The broth is working.
Shout out to Fire and Kettle.
Pour some out for Betty White or who is somebody. what do you guys think, since you're kind of in the world of big, big room touring of Taylor? I mean, like, it's pretty amazing, her
totally
business.
Her, she's somebody that really should be studied by business schools.
I think like, she's a year from being old enough to be president. She should throw her hat in on that.
I mean,
or whatever.
Unbelievable what she, and she owns like, she's now like, she re-recorded the stuff that she didn't own because she signed a
What are you talking about, Taylor Swift or
on.
Taylor Tomlinson?
Both.
Both. but Swift, so she owns like all her music now and she puts together these tours and like they add stadiums the way we add shows. Like stadiums are added. And turns them down. There was a show, I was in Asia, and they were telling me, the promoter was like, yeah, Taylor Swift came here, and we offered something like $50 million to add two things in one of the markets. And she was like, I'm good. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the, because she's doing Europe and Asia now. So like, how does that, like, you know, honestly, like, does the tour ever end or does it keep going? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, for her, she can do, I mean, you know, she has so much leverage. She did that document. She had her movie come out.
Yeah.
I think she got 57% from dollar one. Of
right. Cause it went right to theater or
yeah, it was in theaters.
Streaming.
But to have that much be like, I get 57% from dollar one of this release.
Wow. That's
the like, most impressive thing about her, this is like my stupid brain, is her dad realized when he started touring her that it was hard to rent buses.
Yeah.
So he just bought like 15 buses and was like, I'll just start a bus company.
Oh, cool.
And then, and now if you want to rent a bus, you're renting it from Taylor
Swift.
Wow,
man. That's an crazy. Empire.
It's kind of, it's, I love those little things. Those little cheat codes of life you hear about. And you're like, oh, I wish I had thought of that. I wish I'd bought my bus way before I did.
Well, maybe there's something to the other way of it, which is the retirement tour.
Yeah.
Well, since you're going to play Billy Joel eventually in a biopic.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. He keeps announcing this final MSG thing. Like, this is it, people. Yeah. I'm never doing it again. And then he's on tour with Rod Stewart. Like, I don't get it, you know? Yeah.
And he's fucking like 300 MSG shows in a row. Keeps going.
Yeah. It's, he probably has his own like house, like something. Yeah. He has stuff there. You know?
It's crazy because I said casually in something, I was like, yeah, I'm taking a break after this special. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take like 7 or 9 months off.
And why not eight?
What?
Why not eight?
Why not just 7 or 9?
Okay. All right.
So a European tour.
Okay.
And so, by the way, I've already scheduled my European tour.
You have?
Yeah.
How does that work? Who do you get as an opener for that?
Whoever's
locals?
No. I usually take whoever just parties. Because Europe's kind of a fucking grind for me. Because I'll do, Tom does it different. He takes breaks in between and sightsees and eats croissants. Mm-hmm. I just go day, and I'll do like 21 days straight.
Ouch.
And just do like probably
nuts.
18 shows.
Wow, and, dude.
Yeah, but I've already scheduled it. I already know when I'm starting that tour. And then I think I go from there to Australia and then go to Asia.
This is after the break?
I think I'm starting my break.
Wow.
That way.
Dude.
I'm coming out of my break that way.
Coming out of the break that
way. Yeah, so March I'll be in. I should just say.
do it when?
How long will you be in Australia? We do like a month there?
No. I'll do 2 weeks in Australia. You can clean up 2 weeks pretty quick. Do New Zealand, Australia, and then come back, hit Asia. And then I really want to do India. Like I've wanted to be in India. Yeah. I just thought like I just a theater in India. Yeah.
Just be careful of those Macau monkey troops.
Everyone that's been to India tells me not to go.
That's cool.
But who are the you can already tell like that you would have like ticket sales there, right?
I don't need that many. I just need to feel like I think they probably have like a medium sized
thing. If like one out of every 10 people like you, it's like 100 million people.
So. There you go.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I got a few good Bollywood promos.
I can't wait to see you just sweating. It's so hot there. That's what I've heard. It's just like beyond hot.
Pouring sweat with mud all over your shoes.
Are you going to do a long European tour?
Yeah.
How long?
Probably another like just a month.
Now, do you guys make money doing Europe or is it just for the fun of it?
Well, you don't make crazy money.
You can do real money in the UK now.
Yeah.
In that strip. But when you start going into like, you know.
Lithuania.
Lithuania. Even Western Europe, excluding the English-speaking markets. And
not even the Bosnia funny bone?
They're pretty good. Yeah, you can get a door deal there.
You'd be shocked how fun Germany is.
If you play by the bases, they are all English.
So. It's a lot. Like, Greece was fun. I didn't think Greece would be fun. Greece was wild fun.
Yeah.
And I had an ass hair joke that murdered.
Mm. Well, when I used to do the USO tour, and they would always, the big base in Germany, which is like where they, you know, it's the biggest hub. They would play you there, and it was like really like everybody would come because like you know there's nothing really much to do from America, and it was always disappointing. They were always like, "I'm not famous enough or anything like that." They'd rather see like a you know UFC guy come down like just take a picture, you know, like that. But like it was just so funny how like the kids growing up on that base, you know, they're like, "So this is an American comedy? I'm not that impressed, you know, like that kind of thing. You know, why can't like Jay-Z or somebody come in? Yeah. You know,
no. So, but yeah, it's I'm wondering what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to take a break because I can't. I've straight toured.
Yeah, like
for
you never
20 years. 20 wow. years I've been on the road at least twice a month.
Would a call from Willie Nelson help? Oh. Would Dylan be able to get you to take?
I would love. There's people I'd love to go.
But you're going to break though.
Well, technically, we'll see.
You might go a little crazy.
Go crazy. I can't imagine. I'll probably end up just in my tour bus pretending I'm in tour.
Yeah.
You know what you should do is tour with other people, like outside of like Salman Rushdie. He's back out there. Danger tour.
I would love to team up with, I tried to come up with horrible marketing idea. I tried to get the snack combos to do a comedy tour where you put on two opposing acts.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. And well, they're Christian, so.
We should wrap though.
Yeah, we should wrap.
Dave's new special, New Phone Who Dis, is coming out to Netflix.
New Phone Who Dis.
March, what is it?
March 26th, Hot Cross Buns.
Hot Cross Buns, March 26th. You have to watch.
You have to watch.
This is a must special. Watch.
And as the old vampire in the room, I got to say one thing. Yes. Love hanging with you guys.
We love you.
And am always impressed and thrilled that you let me be a part of your world.
Oh. Buddy.
And you deserve everything. And for the listeners out there, these guys, honestly, you know, this is what comedy should be. And if you're looking for examples of what to do, both on and off the stages, these guys, they treat everyone great. And thank you again.
Thank you, brother.
We're your biggest fan. Thanks so much. Bye, guys.
Did I read that right?
Yeah, you did.
Bert and Tom and Bert. One goes topless while the other wears a shirt. Tom tells stories and Bert's the machine. There's not a chance in hell that they'll keep it clean. Here's what we call Two Bears, One Cave.